On today's episode of the Fumblerooski podcast, is Myles Garrett still the best defensive end edge rusher in the league? Where do guys like Trey Hendrickson and TJ Watt fall? Are the Chiefs going to win their 10th straight AFC West title? Find out next. You're listening to the Fumblerooski podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns. Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
This is the Fumblerooski podcast by Power 88 Dean Radio and Secret Weapon Consulting, ECJ Medeiros. I'm Chris Kostich. Got a good one lined up for you today. Going to do a preview of the AFC West, the final division in the AFC that we have yet to talk about for our off-season coverage this summer. And then we'll also be giving our top five edge rushers going into the 2025 season. But first, some news around the league. Our producer, Adam Wright, wanted to say this was a local, more local story. Which makes sense, you know. We're Pats fans, like, so it makes sense that he would say that. Anyways, Stephon Diggs in some hot water right now, on a boat with some Instagram models calling him daddy. Also, some sort of pink substance in a water bottle. Respect that they called him that. They're calling him daddy. Good for him, I guess. there's your pop culture take for 1 second, but you know, this a wide receiver that the Pats really needed, signed him to a 3-year $69 million deal in March. Now, this really didn't start to get off the rocker until Friday, which, happy belated birthday, CJ. Wanted to throw there for the show. Birthday was on Friday. Now you're 24, right? Yeah.
23.
Oh, my baby boy, the Jordan year. But so Friday, unfortunately, CJ didn't get a good birthday present from Scott Zolak. Reportedly said, going into their show, Bertrand and Zoe in the morning on 98.5, Zoe went into the show basically having the knowledge that there is the possibility that Stephon Diggs could be getting cut and that it is very much on the table. A little bit shocking, but, you know, at the same time, when you really think about it, this is a massive leverage play by the Patriots. The whole contract that they have with Diggs is a massive leverage play in itself. You know, this whole thing with Diggs could have went completely off the rails. Patriots cut him. He gets no money. If he gets cut at any point, he doesn't get a single dime of that $69 million contract, which $26 million is also guaranteed as well. But he would still not be getting any of it because of the stipulations in that contract. CJ, you were telling me you had a rant, so I'll let you take the floor before I give my official opinion on it.
Ah, awesome. Thank you. So, yeah, I do. I have some thoughts on this. There have been some people, not just in New England circles, but across the league. I mean, you look on Instagram, you'll have all these sports pages saying, you know, Diggs is a locker room distraction. New England should cut him. It's not what Drake May needs. He doesn't need that bad press. You know, it's bad for the locker room. It's a bad look on Vrabel to keep him around. My counterpoint is, for the love of God, just shut up. How big of a deal is this really? And even though Scott Zolak said he was a cut candidate, famous hack from Boston, Felger, from Felger and Maz fame, you know, one of those, he's a shock jockey, you know, misinformation peddler. Greg Bedard tore him a new one over his take, saying about how, you know, Diggs probably shouldn't be cut. Or Bedard said that, and he basically said to Felger, dude, just do your job. Very funny. Love that. Shout out Greg Bedard. He's a real one for that. But I want to make something abundantly clear. Is it really a big deal? Oh my God, he was on a boat with some models and some pig substance that no one knows who it is. Okay, and? So here's the thing. Let's just say they do cut him. What kind of message does that send Drake May? Your career isn't as important as our morals? Because that's what I'm hearing. It's like, yeah, well, sure, you're just going to be throwing to plumbers and garbage men again. But hey, at least we've got a good media image. Like, yeah, have fun throwing to nothing. It's like, seriously. See, New England has what I call an easy come, easy go mentality for wide receivers. They have no qualms with letting someone talented walk because they don't suffer divas. And on one hand, I do respect that. But on the other hand, the choir boy wide receiver, you know, these unproblematic guys, you know, like Larry Fitzgerald, Doug Baldwin, AJ Green, Julian Edelman, those guys are gone.
Oh, we got breaking news here.
Ronald Darby's retiring.
Yep.
He once won a Super Bowl as a depth piece with Philly. Thank you, Adam, for that.
Adam, were you trying to tell us that or that? That's wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Just nothing in our ear, just threw it up on a banner.
Yeah, understandable, but the people got to know.
Yeah, I respect
it. So here's the thing, right? Like I said, the choir boy wide receiver is gone, and every receiver now is going to be a little bit of a diva. And when you have this New England mentality of, no, or I'm going to pass up on like elite talent, be it in the draft or be it in free agency due to character concerns, or I use that term loosely, then do you really want to win? I mean, you can't tell Drake May we're committed to helping you and then take away what would be his wide receiver one, because this is the first time you have, at least in name only, a legitimate wide receiver one, or any semblance of a wide receiver one, since Julian Edelman was last healthy in 2019. I know some people say Edelman's not a wide receiver one, but these people are not worth their salt, and we can debate this later, but still, he was a one back in 2019.
CJ, I'll go a step further on that, and they haven't gotten a like big name wide receiver one since Randy Moss, like actually went out and got one, because yeah. Edelman...
Depends on where you're saying Antonio Brown, because they brought him in.
But, yeah, and Antonio Brown, actually, now you think of it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some people would say Brandon Cooks, but
yeah,
I'd say low-level one, but yeah, but no headliners since, like, Randy Moss and Antonio Brown. And Brown, that's, like, a whole thing that's different. But I guess, I mean, look, I was just told that Adam thinks Cooks is a headliner. I don't care.
I mean, at the time he was.
Yeah. Like he's.
But like, I don't really. I don't think of him as a
career too. But that's not the point. It's not why we're here.
Yeah. Yeah.
My point is Diggs. I don't care. I genuinely don't care. Like, oh, yeah. Our morals, our image. Yeah, cool. Good morals have never won a football game. I'm sorry. Like, that's true. And if you are still looking for a choir boy to be your wide receiver one, then I got news for you. You're gonna suck. And I guess at the end of the day, here's the real rant part. It's all a matter of comparison. It really is. Because there's something I want to make abundantly clear. If this Stephon Diggs, and like, what was it? Cardi B was there too, on a boat with some models.
He is reportedly dating Cardi B.
Yes. If that is your biggest problem, Stephon Diggs on both some models and some weird substance, then honestly, you're doing pretty good. Because here's the thing. When I say it's all matter of comparison, I mean it. For example, another wide receiver, take Tyreek Hill. Would you rather have him? He's beating his girlfriends. He's beating his kids. But oh no, Stephon Diggs is on a boat with some models. Really? You have child beaters. You have wife beaters in this league. You have people like Rashi Rice who cause serious car accidents and flee the scene. Some people might say it's a whataboutism. I mean, I know, like some people say, oh, it's whataboutism. I get it. But those people, I just want to say congratulations on using that word you learned yesterday. You know? And some people are like, oh, it's different. Well, no, it's not. My point is, you have all these people doing horrible things, and Diggs, now gets under scrutiny for this. Oh, yeah, but hey, let's forgive Tyreek Hill. Because did you hear about Tyreek Hill? He said, oh, I'm going to church. I'm going to therapy. Sir, there's no therapist that can save you. You're going to hell. The end. I just helped you, Tyreek Hill. You know, and, or here's where it gets better. You know, sure, Stephon Diggs is bad. That's what they say. But what about people like Deshaun Watson? You have a rapist getting a fully guaranteed contract, and people want the Patriots to cut Stephon Diggs? You have wife beaters, you have child beaters, you have rapists, allegedly, and you've got people like Rashee Rice who needlessly endanger people. But no. I'm sorry. Mike Vrabel has got to rise above it. And this is something where I could see him saying, hey, we're human. We make mistakes. You know, everybody gets one. In the words of Spider-Man from Family Guy, everybody gets one. And if I'm going to Diggs, I'm saying, hey, man, you've used your one screw up awfully early. And let's be real. Mike Vrabel, let's talk about his mentality. He's an alpha dog. Some would say he's a lion. And if you're a lion, you got to look past things. The lion doesn't care about women on a boat. The lion does not care about pig substances. So it's one of those things where it's just noise. You can tell people like Scott Zolak and Felger, that's great, but the lion doesn't care. And like I said, when you have people like Tyreek Hill, Deshaun Watson still on a roster, I don't think Stephon Diggs is much of a problem, especially if you're as serious towards helping Drake May as you think you are. Keep Stephon Diggs in New England.
Look, if we're going to talk about players doing coke, that's been a problem in the NFL since its very beginning. Let's be real about that. Look, I think that this whole thing really comes down to the fact, like, Mike Vrabel basically said it himself, like, as long as he's making good decisions, like, whatever. I think the biggest mistake here is that Diggs let himself get videotaped and let that get posted online. That's the biggest mistake. Other than that, I don't really think that many people give a damn what these athletes do outside of work, essentially. Outside of work.
I mean, unless it's, like, really heinous. But like, this isn't really a deal.
Everything that I've seen on X has been Patriots fans being, that's my wide receiver one. That's what I want to see. Wide receiver ones are divas. That's what's going to happen. Like, the only thing that I see wrong, like I said, the only thing that I see wrong, and I'm sure Mike Vrabel sees wrong, is that Dig, like, he's a player. He gets it. You want to have some fun. Like, the only thing he did wrong was get videotaped and let that get out to the internet. That's probably the biggest thing that went wrong here. And I think everyone can agree with that. And CJ, I agree with everything that you said as well. It would just be stupid to cut him at this point. Yeah, you save $69 million, but, like, you need a wide receiver one. You need something for Drake May.
Yeah, you certainly do. And before we move on, I do want to mention, like I said, about New England's easy come, easy go mentality. Yeah, you let them go all the time, but getting them to come in the building, has been a challenge. And I don't want to look too far ahead to the future, but just remember, if you cut Stephon Diggs, next year's wide receiver class in the draft is going to be abysmal. Tread carefully, Patriots.
Yeah. Do want to just mention that Diggs was at OTAs today, just made his appearance today. So, you know, it probably was Mike Vrabel strong-arming him, giving him, like you said, CJ, probably giving him that, you know, you get one screw up and don't do it again type of thing. So it's a great sign, to be honest. But real quickly on some other NFL news that we'll touch on real quick, just a brief mention. Obviously, as we mentioned probably like 5-10 minutes ago, Ronald Darby informing the Texans that he is retiring from the NFL. Lions Pro Bowl center Frank Ragno announcing on Instagram that he's retiring from the NFL. And I think the Lions, of course, were set up for that as well, right? Especially mm-hmm. with the move that they made to replace him in a guy in Graham Glasgow. So Oh, Tate Radledge. Sorry. My apologies. Tate Radledge. Thank you, Adam. So, yeah, that is all the NFL news that we have for you today. Unless any other players freaking decide to retire in the next 2 seconds, or if Jalen Ramsey or Aaron Rodgers wants to make a move. But we're going to move on. When we come back, we're going to get into our AFC West preview. Are the Chiefs going to win the division for the 10th year in a row? I guess we'll talk about it. You're listening to the Fumbarooski Podcast.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
You're listening to the Fumbarooski Podcast. Chris Kostich, he's CJ Medeiros. Moving into the AFC West. If you've been listening the last few weeks, going to do the same thing. Going to go bottom to top in terms of talking about these teams. But real quick, Chiefs, in terms of last year, Chiefs, of course, winning the division, getting the number one overall seed at 15-2. Somehow, some way, 15-2, number one seed, making it to the Super Bowl and losing to the Eagles 40-22. The Chargers, 11-6, finished in second place, losing in the wild card round to the Houston Texans in a pretty bad Justin Herbert performance, but we'll talk about Justin Herbert more down the line. Denver Broncos, shocking the entire league. They finished in third, but only a game back from the Chargers, going 10-7, and, you know, 3-3 in the division, pretty well done for them. And of course, keeping home field advantage at 6-2, loss to the Bills in the wild card round. And defense, man, defense. Does that make a difference? The Raiders finishing in last place at 4-13, firing Antonio Pierce, hiring Pete Carroll. And that's where we'll start with here. Getting the 6th overall pick and drafting Ashton Jeanty at running back. As mentioned, they got Pete Carroll as their head coach. Then they traded for Geno Smith to be the quarterback. Making some big moves out there. And, of course, you got Brock Bowers as your tight end. Ashton Jeanty, hopefully going to bring some life to a running game that was at the bottom of the league last year. Now, the only real problem is that you don't have much of anything else outside of that. One of the bigger moves that you made was bolting up the offensive line and getting Alex Kappa to play right. He's currently listed as the number one right guard for the Raiders right now on the depth chart. So they were somewhat active in the offseason, and also extending Max Crosby as well, I'm pretty sure, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, he was. I think it was, I want to say, beginning of March, early or late February, and he held it, and he held the highest paid defensive player, highest paid non-quarterback in the league, and then held it for like 1 week before Myles Garrett took it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So, like I said, Raiders making some big moves. I don't really see them doing a whole lot still this year. I could see them doing better. Like you said, probably going to have a much more revitalized run game. I could see them probably at the very least being middle of the pack, maybe not dead last or at like bottom five, but I could see it being better. And I have high hopes in general because you do have Pete Carroll and Geno Smith teaming up again. And seeing how it went in Seattle, I could see similar things in Vegas, but, you know, also two very different teams at that point as well. Pardon me again. Sorry. Either way, regardless of all that, having Pete Carroll as your head coach is a huge step up. Proven guy over in Seattle, winning a Super Bowl, countless number of playoff appearances as well. I still don't see them getting out of last place, though. There's just too much going on in the AFC West. I say that they get themselves up to 7 wins, though, and win more than no divisional games. Maybe they get a sneaky upset on a cup on like each team and each game's at home type of thing. So, CJ, what do you think? What is your go about on the Raiders?
I don't think the Raiders are built to compete, and I think that was by design. I believe I said this when they hired Pete Carroll and signed Geno Smith. This isn't a team that wants to compete for a Super Bowl. This is, in large part, a team that I wouldn't say settled for, but a team that knowingly went after placeholders. Because you know Geno Smith and Pete Carroll are not going to be there in the long term.
No.
So this is a team that, after coming off the disastrous Josh McDaniels coaching tenure and Antonio Pierce making business decisions, this is a team that's not striving for Super Bowl, but rather normalcy. Just trying to steer the ship into calmer waters, for lack of any better terminology.
Trying to steer them to not be one of the butt of the jokes of the league.
I mean, you want to go from, I mean, look, average is still going to be tough to achieve, but you just don't want to be a dumpster fire anymore. And I respect that. And getting Ashton Jeanty, I think, is going to help as well. So all the pressure isn't on Geno Smith. And Jeanty can make something out of nothing. And I really do like that. They did have, unfortunately, that 4-13 record, which allowed them to, you know, get Jeanty at 6. But I can see them improving. I would be shocked if they stayed as bad as they were, because you no longer have to deal with Aiden O'Connell at quarterback. So that in and of itself is a step up. You know, Max Crosby's no longer disgruntled, so you don't have that hanging over you. And Geno Smith should pair well with guys like Jacoby Myers and Brock Bowers, who's looking to take that next step, even though he took a massive step his rookie year. The only issue that I can think of for the Raiders is what's going on with Colton Miller. And he might be traded. He might be unhappy. He might not be. I don't know.
Yeah, either way, this is just a bridge for the next couple of years, really. Don't expect much out of the Raiders this season. What you can't expect much out of is the Broncos. Finished 10-7 last year. Wild card loss to the Bills. But showed a lot of promise. And Sean Payton raved about Bo Nix all training camp long. And Bo, you know, when you have a Sean Payton offense, it's a very complicated offense. And it seems Bo Nix has been able to cycle himself around that and be a very good quarterback. Now, here's the other thing that a lot of people brought up as well. Like, Bo Nix had some good quarterback play, but when you look at the offensive analytics of everything, the real difference maker was the defense. The defense was top 5 in almost every single category last season, especially when you look at the deeper analytics as well. The main difference was the defense, and you could tell in that playoff game as well against the Bills that the defense had the perfect game plan, but they were going up against Josh fucking Allen, MVP Josh Allen. But either way, this was a season to be proud of, first winning season since 2015. And what did they do after that? Well, in draft terms, they didn't really do a ton. It was a little interesting. CJ, what is your makeup of the Broncos?
You may remember, if you've been watching the show for a bit, how last season I was one of those people that wasn't necessarily high on Denver. And frankly, them getting knocked around in the playoffs really didn't shock me all that much. Yeah. And like, don't get me wrong, Bo Nix opened the game hot, but he fizzled out and fast. So as a whole, I think with Sean Payton commanding the way, Nix should improve. Keyword is should. But Denver doesn't strike me as a team that took any great leaps. I mean, don't get me wrong, their defense, I think, is going to go from great to whatever the hell's after great, because they grabbed Talanoa Hufanga and Dre Greenlaw from the 49ers. So that's going to make them even more dangerous. You know, you pair that up with guys like Pat Surtain, And yeah, that's just something really to hang your hat on. But my issue with Denver is, let's be real, Bo Nix is kind of a schedule merchant. Denver had a really easy schedule. He wailed on really bad teams, but would routinely get smacked around by contenders, as evidenced by the playoffs. And now that Denver, I wouldn't say, I don't really know what to make of their schedule this year, but now it's a little tougher. I think this is a good test for Bo Nix. And while I'm still a little skeptical, my views on him have softened a bit, and I definitely think he can. I definitely see him improving, is all I'll say.
Yeah. I'm seeing a big Bo Nix improvement here as well. Hopefully we can see Cortland Sutton really explode onto the scene as well this season. I've been high on Cortland Sutton. I really want him to blow up. This has got to be the year. This got to be the year. If this isn't the year, then all is lost for him, in my opinion.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah. In terms of how they're going to do this season, I'd say 10-7 is pretty safe again. I wouldn't be surprised if they ended with the same record that they had last year and maybe hanging around that 2-3 spot because, as we mentioned, Chargers were only a game up on the division against Denver at 11-6 record and Denver being at 10-7. So it can very easily be the opposite way here.
Yeah, that was really insane, you know, that turnaround for Denver. They've been mired in misery for so long, and they finally take a swing on a quarterback in the top 15. And hey, what do you know? It turns out that's all the difference. Well, that and an actually good coach, because as you see, first winning season since 2015. The last time the Broncos won a playoff game was literally the Super Bowl, and you got to see Peyton Manning ride off into a sunset. And for Denver, I think now this is really where the rubber meets the road. This is going to be the real test, because a lot of the people, or a lot of the takes about Bo Nix being a schedule merchant, I don't really, I mean, as much as my views soften on him, I kind of want to admit it. That's still, I feel like it's accurate. You know, like I said, like whenever he played against a contender, he got smacked around. That's something that I want to see more. I want to see him beat contenders. And not one of those moral victories where, oh, you showed you can hang with them. No, I don't want you to hang with a good team. I want you to win. So I feel like he has the ability to do that. And if he doesn't, well, we'll cross the bridge when we come to it. I think he should be fine.
Yeah, I concur. Moving on to the Chargers. 11-6 record last year. Lost to the Texans in the wild card round. And Justin Herbert. Boy, I love Justin Herbert. I really do. A lot of people started to write him off after that playoff loss. And for good reason. For good reason. He did not have a good game. That is very, very safe to say. The shocking part is that this is only his second playoff. That was only his second playoff game that he has ever played in. The first one being the emphasis. Infamous 24-point blown lead that they gave up to the Jaguars in the wild card round of the 22 season. Ooh, bad. Bad, bad, bad. Now, I give Herbert some not as much flack for that game. This game, I'll give him some flack, but I don't think we can write him off completely just yet. He played a pretty solid season. The numbers don't show it, but he had a solid season, 23 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 3,800 yards. But that was mainly because of the type of offense that Jim Harbaugh was running. And for good reason, because Herbert didn't really have many receivers outside of Ladd McConkey. Over the offseason, now you pick up Najee Harris. You get Mike Williams back, because why not? So you're looking to pick it up, especially with Joel as one of your tackles who had an insane rookie season. So expect him to be a top 5 offensive tackle, this coming season. if he can perform the same way. The real X factor in this whole thing from last season, though, was Jim Harbaugh easily going from the 5-12 record in 2023 to going 11-6 and making the playoffs the next year. Incredible. It's incredible. And the trends show that the Chargers are probably going to make the Super Bowl this year because that's just what Jim Harbaugh does. I could see them doing another 11-6 season. What were some other moves that the Chargers made? I'm blanking on them right now, CJ.
Well, that is the issue. That's something that I did actually want to address. The Chargers, the most noteworthy guy they brought in was Steelers cast-off Najee Harris. You know, the guy who will get you 1,000 yards, but on like 3 yards a carry. Probably the least efficient back in the entire NFL. And beyond that, it's kind of shocking because the Chargers, I'm sure you recall, Chris, were swimming in cap space. They had, I believe they were top five, and they just didn't spend. You know, they were teased with a big spending spree. They were, you know, a new sexy team with a good coach and a great quarterback. And they just kind of, they played it conservative. They didn't really add anything for Herbert, which in my eyes was the exact wrong thing to do. I mean, I think all they did outside of Harris was, I believe they grabbed Mekhi Becton. But that's not going to make you a contender. I mean, he's a good guard, but who does Herbert have to throw to? I mean, there's really nobody there. That's really the issue here, is that there's nobody there that Herbert has to throw to. I mean, it's just, that's literally it. That's everything. It's like, I mean, look, Ladd McConkey's good, but I mean, I'm still waiting for him to, you know, I mean, I so still waiting, like he's not entering a second year, but I would admittedly be surprised if he became like a top five receiver in the league. And this might be a take that might get me in some trouble with some people, but I really don't care. We got to have a conversation about Justin Herbert. I'm tired of the excuses, because do you want to know the Justin Herbert motto? If, I mean, you've seen the joke, people are treating him like a superhero, if man, because it's never his fault. If he had better receivers, if he had better coaching, if he had a better line, if the defense was better, then what? Like, seriously, like if I'm tired of if. No, there's no more ifs. This is on Herbert now.
Yeah. Looking at like some of the other things that the Chargers could be doing right now too, is they could be re-signing J.K. Dobbins. They could be re-signing Asante Samuel Jr.
They haven't even done that.
Nope. And 26 minutes ago, according to Sports Illustrated, Chargers projected $45 million free agents predicted to stay in LA, but with the Rams. So throw that out the window, but the Chargers did also grab Dante Jackson and free agency as well. From the Steelers last year, had 5 interceptions. So not a bad corner to have, in case you officially do move on from Asante Samuel Jr. And we've mentioned this a few times. We probably won't see any official wording on him until he gets done with, whatever physical he's supposed to have. Pretty sure this month, actually.
Yeah.
Moving on to the Super Bowl runner-up, the Kansas City Chiefs. 15-2 record last year, lost in the Super Bowl to the Eagles. Ended up having the first overall seed in the AFC playoffs. Beat the Bills in the AFC Championship game. Beat the Texans in the divisional round. Chiefs, sneakily, the Texans and Bills daddies. No one talks much about how much they beat up on the Texans because, well, the Bills are just so much more heartbreaking. Chiefs have won the AFC West 9 years in a row. Josh Simmons, one of their big offseason signings. Oh, baby. Draft pick, sorry. But either way, a great addition. You're getting Isaiah Pacheco back, or getting Rashee Rice back. You're going to have Hollywood Brown for a whole season, for a full season. That's huge. Probably your biggest loss was, what's his face? Joe Tooney. That's probably your biggest loss.
Yeah, I would say so. Man, the Chiefs are one of those teams where as long as they have Mahomes, they'll be good, but they've kind of been stagnant for the last few years. The roster continues to regress. I mean, sure, you have a full season Rashee Rice, but what does that mean for Xavier Worthy? Now, Worthy, some would say, caught fire at the end of the year, but is it me, or does he, or for a guy that fast, he has trouble getting open? Whenever I saw him catch the ball had to be schemed into his hands. If you have to be schemed open and you can't just get open naturally, then you're not a wide receiver one. I don't understand how someone that fast needs to have plays designed for him instead of just finding the ball naturally.
You might as well just wear like number zero and call yourself a scat back at that point.
Yeah, I agree. And Kelce is getting worse. I mean, these past two seasons, now that his big claim to fame of 1,000 yards every year is gone, I can say that he's probably played himself out of that top three conversation. He's not, or for tight ends at least, he's not nearly what he was. And Chris Jones getting up there in age, they're locked into some less than ideal contracts. But it really doesn't matter because as long as they have Mahomes, they're going to be a threat. But when you see how all these other AFC teams really started beefing up, then the road's, I just think the road's going to be a lot harder for them.
100%. I don't see them winning 15 games again this season. And if they do, they're selling the soul to Taylor Swift or something like that. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but that's like the only thing that I can think of at this rate, besides just saying the league is rigged, right? It's kind of like the Pacers. They did some sort of freaking voodoo devil magic to get themselves to the finals or something. I don't even know.
Possibly.
But, yeah, like I said, don't see the Chiefs winning 15 games again this year. I see them winning like cool 11, 12 games.
Yeah,
11, 12 games.
Yeah.
And they're probably going to sneak their way into the AFC Championship game because it's Patrick Mahomes. Like, that's how it is every single season. Now, I think we're going to probably see more of an emergence from some of these guys as well. Like, you have an extremely fast wide receiver core again, right? Rashee Rice, no pun intended, Xavier Worthy, Hollywood Brown. It's very fast wide receiver core. So, probably going to have a lot of fun again with, expect a lot of misdirection stuff. That's what I would say. If you're wondering what the Chiefs are probably going to do this year. Think of 2018, 2019, maybe even heighten that.
Yeah, when you look at how the Chiefs are built, they're definitely going to be a team that I think is going to rely a lot on gadget plays, kind of like when Mahomes first started out and how they had to rely on trickery rather than outright outplaying them, their opponents. I feel like Andy Reid's really going to have to go deep into his bag and rely more on gimmicks than on an actual like scheme, you know?
Yeah. 100%. Either way, like I said, still have him winning the division at,
oh, absolutely.
Let's call it 12 wins. Officially 12 wins.
Yeah, I can see 12.
Yeah. That is the AFC West preview. Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna give our top five edge rushers going into the 2025 season.
It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6 or 7 spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast. He's CJ. I'm Chris. Top five edge rushers, player rankings. Fourth set of player rankings we've done this season. Started out with the safeties, went to linebackers, got done with cornerbacks last week. And, well, now we have two more. Or, wait, are we doing the defensive tackles too next week, right?
No, just edge rushers.
Okay. I keep getting the schedule mixed up in my head. But, well, if you've been listening in the past, if you haven't already, CJ, you can go first.
Ah, thank you, Chris. You are very generous. So, kicking us off for my number five, oh boy, Trey Hendrickson. Now, this man is a nightmare for defenses, and probably the only good defensive player left in Cincinnati. 17 and a half sacks, leading the league last season. 46 combined tackles, 33 of them being solo, 36 QB hits as well. First team all pro, 6 passes knocked down the line, 2 forced fumbles. Now, what you're thinking, oh, but CJ, that's amazing. Why isn't he higher? Well, I'm glad you asked. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. I don't know. Let's just pretend you did. So he's 30. And come, I believe, December, he's going to be 31. That's usually, at least for a lot of these more physical positions, where we tend to see a tiny bit of a decline. And I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't know if he's going to play that much this year. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, football speaking, you probably know that he and the Bengals have reached a stalemate for his contract. In fact, he's willing to sit out the entire season if he's not traded, or at least if they don't give him what he wants. So the only reason I have him at five is out of respect for his abilities, but I just flat out don't know if he's going to play. That's the only reason why I have him at five. You probably argue him down to like two or three, but there's a very real and very likely chance he won't play. At bare minimum, he's going to miss some time, because both sides are pretty dug in. The Bengals are ruining everything again, and Hendrickson's had enough. You know, this is a classic case of the Bengals taking a page out of the Dallas Cowboys playbook, where they just wait too long and the market dictates them. So moving on to number four, I feel weird putting him there just because of his injury, but Aiden Hutchinson. He only played 5 games last year, so I felt weird putting him top 5. But he had 19 total tackles across 5 games. But here's the crazy thing, still across 5 games. 7.5 sacks, 7 tackles for loss, and 17 quarterback hits across 5 games. Yeah, that's worth being top 5. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, but CJ, you didn't put, Jair Alexander in your top 5 for corners due to injuries. Well, here's the thing. That was Hutchinson's 3rd season in the league, right? And he played an entire 17 games his freshman and sophomore seasons in the NFL, as it were, or his rookie and sophomore seasons. But now, so this injury could very well be an exception and not the rule. Whereas with Jair Alexander, that was the rule. You're only going to get 6 to 7 games out of him a year. So Hutchinson, yeah, I definitely think he is worthy of being top 5. Plus, he's a full go for the start of next season. He was an early season injury, which means he's going to be ready for week 1. So yeah, I cannot wait. So moving on to my number 3, Micah Parsons. This man is a pure pass rusher. 43 combined tackles, 12 tackles for loss, 23 QB hits, and 12 sacks, along with 2 forced fumbles to boot. And when it comes to just being a pure pass rusher, look no further than Micah Parsons. The only ding on him is that he can't do anything else. And when I say anything else, I mean he can sometimes be a liability in run defense. That's basically what I mean. He can play coverage sometimes, I guess, but I remember I go back and forth with our producer, Adam, about oh, well, I've always brought up coverage before, but he's like, yeah, well, I don't want my edge rusher to be good in coverage. So it is what it is. And low key, I do think he is a point now. And they only dropped him to coverage sparingly last season, less than they ever have. He's only targeted four times. So yeah, if he was better at run defense, I'd have him higher. But in the meantime, this is where Micah Parsons will have to be. Don't get me wrong, this man is still a monster, and he's going to be in line for a massive payday next offseason. Unless the Cowboys screw it up, which is very, very possible. Never underestimate the senility of Jerry Jones. So, moving on to number two, give me TJ Watt. So, yeah, I'll say 11.5 sacks. Sure, it's not the sexiest number, but 61 total tackles, 27 quarterback hits, 6 forced fumbles, 4 passes batted down at the line, a monster in the run game. He's got everything you want. He's basically Micah Parsons if Micah Parsons could do literally everything else. He can stop the run. He makes plays. He doesn't just get sacks. He makes plays. He forces turnovers. 7 career picks. Didn't have any last year, but he can drop into coverage. But then again, that's not the most important thing for an edge rusher. And 6 forced fumbles as well. Last season, at least. So he can, in fact, take the ball away. And that is something that I really do appreciate with him. The only reason why, despite the fact that he can do everything, why I don't have him at one, this is something we talked about last year. I believe it was Adam who brought it up. This man does not get double teamed, like, at all. Everyone else gets double teamed except him. And I know because he's got Alex Highsmith alongside him, but, you know, I want to see him get double-teamed as much as my number one. Then maybe we can talk. Speaking of which, my number one, Myles Garrett of the Cleveland Browns. This man, oh, my God. He's played 8 years in the league, and for the last 7 years, he's had double-digit sacks. Coming off back-to-back 14-sack seasons, 47 combined tackles. Are you ready for this? 28 quarterback hits and a league-leading 22 tackles for loss, as well as 3 forced fumbles. Need I say more? On top of being one of, if not the, don't quote me on that, most double-teamed player in the NFL, if not number one, then I know he's probably top 5. Second most. Thank you, Adam. Adam just buzzed in and told me that. But yeah, despite being the second most double-team player in the league, he's still a force in the run game to get those tackles for loss, to hit the quarterback, and to force 3 fumbles. Myles Garrett's my number one all day.
I like it. Listener disclaimer, I got the same 5 guys. I'm just going to say it right now. Same 5 guys, just a little bit of a different order. And we'll start with number 5. TJ Watt's number 5 for me. He's not number 2. He's not number 3. He's number 5 for me. He's a fantastic edge rusher, fantastic football player, absolute animal. One of the highlights that you'll see on NFL films is him getting a sack with his helmet taken off. The problem I have is the decrease in numbers from last season from him, as well as his inability to perform late in the season. Last 4 games of the year last year, including the playoff game against Baltimore, 7 total tackles, no sacks. He wasn't there. Just wasn't there. Granted, I think there was like an injury concern with him. But either way, he didn't perform. And when you need a big-name player like TJ Watt to perform late in the season and he doesn't show up, what does that say? Now, I agree with everything that you've said about TJ Watt. But with that information in mind, he's at 5 for me. Number 4, Aiden Hutchinson. My only concern is how he's going to play after the injury. The statistics say them, like, show for themselves. He is a top 5 guy. Could potentially, it is maybe even top 3 with what he probably could have gone to last season. He was 5 weeks in, he was at the top of everyone's list for defensive player of the year easily. And then he got hurt in that 5th game. So that's really the only concern for me. Number 3, I have Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons also an absolute animal. also an absolute animal. And I think my big thing too is, as CJ said, not as great in the run game as he is in the pass game, but that could also go for, as we had mentioned, him being the highest rated double team guy in the league. And that kind of showed when you look at, take out Aiden Hutchinson real quick, of the other four players that we have on our list, he ended up having the fewest amount of tackles for loss. Number two, I got Trey Hendrickson. Hendrickson, of course, leading the league in sacks last year, potentially up, is fighting for this contract right now. He's going to play. This is my list going into this season if Trey Hendrickson plays. Yeah, he's going to be on the wrong side of 30, but who's to say this isn't his last great year and he's going to put up another fat number so he gets his payday, most likely somewhere else, or gets traded, or he gets traded and goes off somewhere else. Either way, this is a big name guy that is going to play his absolute tail off like a top two edge rusher, so he gets paid like a top two edge rusher. Probably not the highest paid non-quarterback of all time like Myles Garrett, but he's going to try to get himself paid like one. Which leads me to number one, Myles Garrett. It's, what else can you really say about him? Absolute animal ever since he got it into the league. There's really not much else to say. He is 100% that guy. That is my top five. That is our top five.
I agree with number one and number three. But yeah, I mean, you got to understand where I'm coming from, at least with Trey Hendrickson. Is like, I don't know if he's going to play. He's not bluffing anymore. Like, he's willing to just sit out the entire year. But
I'd love to see also, how.
One thing I will say about Micah Parsons, real quick, is that I know I sound like every other old head harping on this, but dude, stop the podcasting. Like, your team just lost and you're hopping on a podcast. Nah, man. Imagine how much better you could be if you'd stop.
For real. In the case of Trey Hendrickson, I'm curious to see if this turns into like a Hassan Reddick type of situation and Hendrickson just starts getting fined for like $500,000 and his agency cuts him as a client because no one in their right mind tells you to lose $500 million every single week that you don't play in a game. See if that happens. Going to be interesting to see how that ends up, though. But that is our top five. Anything you want to add, CJ?
No, I'm fine.
Well, that's all the scheduled content that we have for you tonight. Thank you for tuning in for another Tuesday episode of the Fumble Rooski Podcast. New episode coming out next Tuesday at 7:30, same time, same day, you know it. Next week, we're doing NFC East. And what's the player group, CJ?
I believe tight ends.
We got to do a better job of looking before, or I got to do a better job of looking at this before I start talking about it.
It's really no problem, Chris. We forgive you, but it is NFC East breakdown and top five tight ends. We're moving to the NFC now, kids.
Hell yeah. So tight ends and the NFC East next week. Be sure to tune in for that, along with any other news that might come across the table going throughout the rest of this week. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Also have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Be sure to follow our Instagram, Fumbleski_podcast, to keep up with the pod and latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we will see you next week. Over and out.